Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Economics and the Spiritual Path, hosted by David Axelrod with guidance from Dax. Each show expands on the language, ideas, and insights from economic thought that can empower and enlighten the journey through your inner environment toward healing, creativity, and spiritual expression.
Alternatives there.
So alternatives then are in essence dealing with the space of possibility in decision making. You know, what's possible? And I refer to it as a space because it's not what you have selected yet. It is the space within which you can select something, you can choose something. So it's the space of possibility. Now, where there are alternatives, at least in terms of economics and practical decision making, it's insufficient for it to be an alternative, for something that could be possible. There are lots of things that are possible, but they're not necessarily feasible. So feasibility is a term that economists use to indicate that it's a choice that you can realize. So, for example, if you're talking about what you can choose in the moment when you're in that ice cream store, it's the flavors that are right in front of you. Whereas in the pure space of possibility, you certainly can imagine there being other flavors. Or you can imagine yourself not being in an ice cream store. Maybe you like chocolates more. Or maybe you don't like sweets at all and you'd rather, you know, be eating pizza. Or maybe you want to be fasting and, you know, you want to be on a nice mountaintop just meditating and fasting and, you know, clearing your mind and your body. So while those all may be possibilities, if you happen to be in an ice cream store, what's feasible at that moment are the flavors that are in front of you. So that's an important distinction to make between imagining what is possible and choosing among what is feasible. Now, that's not to say that there isn't a use for considering possibilities. Sometimes the way we expand, how we can express ourselves in our lives is by considering all the possibilities, even if they're not feasible in a particular moment. Because then we could start considering, okay, what is necessary in order to make it feasible? And then you can backtrack from, you know, where you want to go, and you bring the steps back to where you are now so that you can figure out how to get to where you want to go. But in any moment, what you can choose from is from what is feasible. So if alternatives are the space of possibility, then feasibility deal with the limits for manifestation. So in any particular moment, what are the limits for manifestation in that particular moment? So that also means that the further out into the future you consider, the wider the range of what becomes feasible. And so as you can see here, and based on what we talked about before, time plays a very big role in not only determining what part of your mind will be making decisions, you know, whether it'll be, you know, your physical mind or your emotional mind or your rational mind, but also in what we were just talking about, what is even feasible, or at least what you're aware of as being feasible. Now, where there is feasibility, where you haven't chosen quite yet, there is uncertainty. And this is a very important relationship to understand, that to be in the process of making a choice, of making a decision, and about to make a choice, until you have made your decision, until you've made your choice, there is uncertainty about what the future is going to look like. You know, what is it going to look like once you've made that decision? So why is there uncertainty? Because there are still these feasible alternatives that have not been, as a physicist might say, collapsed to a single outcome from which you build your future off of. So when you're in the presence of making a choice, you are also in the presence of uncertainty. And so this uncertainty is going to be associated with probability. So one way of understanding uncertainty is as the sense of probability. So if you feel like something is pretty certain, then you have a sense that there's a high probability of it happening. If you feel that it's very uncertain, then you have a sense that there's a very low probability of it's going to happen. So part of the challenge here then is, in order to have the power to make a choice in your life, you have to, at least for a little bit, be able to sit with the uncertainty of what's going to happen, because it's not clear what's going to happen until you've chosen. So that's part of empowerment, is being able to sit with the uncertainty that comes from being powerful. So once you've had uncertainty, then around uncertainty and this probability is going to be energy, because where there's uncertainty, there's multiple alternatives, and the essence of energy is a description of how wide a range of different outcomes are available. If there's only one outcome available, there's no energy. There's no possibility of movement. But if there's a wide range of feasible outcomes, where there's going to be a good bit of uncertainty, then there's a lot of energy. And so that's the relationship. If you want a lot of energy in your life, you will also be sitting with a lot of uncertainty. And so energy then can be understood as the capacity for movement. The more energy you have, the more capacity for movement and change. The less energy you have, the less capacity to move. So if you think about people in your lives, or maybe a moment in your own life where you felt like you had no energy, well, that was probably associated with the feeling that you couldn't change anything. You know, that there was no room for movement in your life. Where there is energy, there are impressions in our mind. Anywhere there's energy, that will leave some kind of mark in our awareness of the world. And so that's another way of understanding what an impression is. So when you have an impression about how someone is acting, or you have an impression of what a sunset looks like, or you have an impression from a song that you're listening to, or you have an impression about the taste of a food, that's all about the awareness of reality. Now, that doesn't mean that the impressions are perfect or absolute or ideal or anything like that, but there is an awareness of something there, and that it has to deal with the experience of reality. And that brings us to the next point, where there are impressions, possibility for consciousness. So the idea here is that whereas impressions gives you an awareness of reality, awareness is not quite the level of consciousness. What you may understand consciousness as is an awareness of awareness. So, for example, to a certain extent, a rock is aware of the world around it. It's going to be affected by gravity. It may be affected by the electromagnetic force. It might be affected internally by strong and weak forces, things like that. So there is at least a rudimentary awareness of the world that even a rock has, because there's energy around it. Even if we don't experience this human energy, it certainly has physical energy, and that it is impressed upon by the world. Mountains, it may take a long time, but mountains change. Sometimes they move up, sometimes they move down, they crumble apart. If you go many millions of years, if you go billions of years, what might be a mountain at one point becomes a valley another time. And so from that perspective, the rocks that made up that mountain, they move. So they have at least a rudimentary awareness of reality. So where there's this awareness of that awareness, that is consciousness. And so that's a distinction that's important, because when you're conscious of something, it's not just affecting you. You are aware that it's affecting you. And that is both a potential and a challenge, because the moment that you're aware that something is affecting you, it's difficult to ignore it. And while consciousness can be empowering, it is also very demanding, because it goes from being in an unconscious state where, stuff is going on in the world and, maybe your body is reacting, either by instinct or habit, but it's not necessarily rising to the point where you're making a conscious choice. When it gets to the point of consciousness, it's something you have to deal with. There is a choice to be made. And that's part of the challenge, is now all of a sudden you've got to use more energy in making a decision, more energy in making a choice, and there's not as much energy available for implementing that choice. This is one of the reasons why a lot of what we do, a lot of what occurs in our body, occurs at the unconscious level. Things like breathing, like digestion, if you literally had to make the choice of exactly, all right, how much of different enzymes and acids are you going to mix in your stomach, and how long are you going to let it go through your digestive system? That is going to be a lot of work to have to make a conscious choice about, and it doesn't necessarily help you. Now, what can help you is that you eat things that are not really challenging to digest. Once you've eaten something, you don't necessarily want to get into the minutia of, which specific chemicals, to consciously select to help you digest. So this is one of the reasons why, when it comes to consciousness, you can understand your body and underlying roots may not always bring up what's going on, the impressions and energies in the world, up to the level of consciousness. And so consciousness then is about the focus for experience. So consciousness is a type of experience of the world. But in particular, it is your capacity to focus for an experience. So running through all these, what we have is there are alternatives. So that's the space of possibility. From there, there's feasibility. That's the limits for manifestation. Uncertainty, is the sense of probability. Then there's energy, the capacity for movement. From energy, there are impressions, which is the awareness of reality. And finally, consciousness, which is the focus for experience. So if you can pull these all together, then alternative consciousness is about being conscious of the alternatives that are available in your life. And again, part of empowerment is being able to have a broader, wider, deeper awareness of what your alternatives are. At the same time, we kind of also don't want to have too many alternatives to choose from, because that takes up a lot more energy and it takes up more space in our consciousness. And if you remember our discussions about impressions and expressions, the idea here would be when you're making a choice, you're expressing yourself. When you're allowing yourself to be conscious and savor the impressions that are coming into you, that is where you can kind of enjoy being, you know, the observer of the world that you're in. And that's one of the, you know, economic of mind challenges, is getting that balance of being able to appreciate what is coming into you, as, you know, if you want, as a gift of what you experience in life, and at the same time being able to have some resources for influencing what the world around you will be like, so that you can have experiences that are closer to either what you want or what you dream about, or enable you to express your deeper, highest spirit. So with that long introduction, I'd like to invite Carol to make whatever comments you would like. Hello, Carol.
Hi, David. From earlier in your talk, I was listening to you talk about what's feasible and what's possible and the path that you to get you to where you want to go. And from a counseling point of view, that's very much a treatment plan. When the client first comes to me, I kind of gather information about what their life looks like right now and get a sense of what parts of their life are working well and what parts of their life are working not as well as they'd like. And then from that information, we sort of figure out what they would like those areas of their life to look like, and then we make a plan to get them where they want to go. But in order to do that, again, they have to be able to identify what are their alternatives. Empowerment that you were just talking about moments ago, coming from the deeper awareness of the alternatives. And for me, the empowerment of the client is really about which of those alternatives move them towards their goal and the life that they most want to experience.
Well, thank you very much. I always find it very interesting. If our listeners don't know, Carol and I have had many years of conversations about spirit and economics and counseling, and we've gone to some very deep places. this is one of the reasons why I wanted Carol on the show, and two is kind of a reminder that there's not always a big difference between, let's say, being an economic consultant and being a more of like an emotional counselor. They both deal with making decisions. They both deal with being aware of what alternatives you have. You know, what are the resources that you have to deal with it? Dealing with the question of how much change can you handle in the process of dealing with the problem? During our conversations, the comment of, okay, I've got to deal with this, but first thing is, I've got this bigger thing I've got to go through first, then I'll deal with this other stuff. And so a lot of it is about priorities.
Very much so. When you were talking about having no room for movement, being in a state of low energy, that's very meaningful from a counseling point of view, too. When a client comes to me and they feel like they don't have very many choices, they sometimes say, well, I just feel hopeless now because I have this situation and I don't know what to do about it, and I don't feel like I have any really good alternatives. My power in the situation is really limited, and I have these things to choose from, but none of them are particularly attractive.
Yep.
Maybe you have something to say about that.
Yeah, that is a really good point. One of the things I try to teach in my economics class is the notion of rationality is that you always want to choose the best alternative that's available. But it's not always the case that you're going to like any of the alternatives. If you talk about relationships, maybe you get to a point where you realize, okay, this relationship is not working, but you also don't want to go through the process of breaking up. Okay? Neither is particularly appealing, but it still makes a big difference in your life, certainly in the long run, which one you choose. Same thing, let's say, at the national level. Do you break down, you break off diplomatic relationships with the country, and, maybe you'll risk having not as much trade, more tension, or do you just go directly to war? Okay, you don't necessarily want to do either of them, but there's a big difference between what happens with whichever one you choose. And there's a reason why economics is sometimes called the dismal science, because if you do have one alternative that is just totally appealing to you, it's like, okay, I love this, I'm going to do this. You know what? You're probably not going to sit down and rationally analyze it. There's one that's an obvious best solution, and you want it, and you like that outcome. You're not necessarily going to benefit from doing a deep rational analysis. So where economic thinking, where all this reflection comes in, is when you've got to make the really difficult choices, where there is going to be some big sacrifice either way. And to me, that's also where economics and spirituality come into play, because it's in the moments where you have to make big sacrifices that you get the deepest expression of who you really are.
Yes, very much so. And that reminds me of when you were talking about uncertainty and awareness of reality and the possibility of consciousness that. And I thought, in counseling, uncertainty often causes anxiety. And then anxiety gets in the picture, and that actually inhibits the decision-making process.
Yes, yes.
So how do you speak to that, the factoring in of anxiety? And to relieve the anxiety, it's necessary to choose. And yet, if you are faced with either few choices or unattractive choices, or you really favor one choice, but it may or may not actually move you in the direction you ultimately want to go. It may be more of a short-term band-aid or fix, but not really be as profitable, or if that's the right word.
Or beneficial.
Or beneficial. That's a good word. For the long-term outcome.
Right. That's a really good point about anxiety. Because all of us at some point have to deal with anxiety, and certainly some of us who are deep thinkers and consider every little thing, you can kind of gear into that if you're not careful. but the point about anxiety really gets at what do you need to do to create a better mindset to see all your alternatives clearly, to see the consequences clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you're freaked out, you're just going to see the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't get to the point of recognizing, yeah, that's the problem, but that's nowhere as bad a problem as this other thing.
Right.
You know? Then you miss out on making the better choice for the long run. You know, sometimes life is about just getting through the difficult time, and you know that once you get through it, things will open up. But if you don't make the choice to get through the difficult time, because you never want to choose, something bad.
Right. Or if you're trying to choose to not experience the anxiety.
Right.
And it's like sometimes you just have to let yourself be with the anxiety and feel the anxiety. And work your way through that feeling and know that, yes, it's uncomfortable, but it's not going to be fatal. But in the meantime, if I don't choose, then something is going to happen of its own accord, and I won't have any agency at all.
That's right. And that is one of the challenges, is we don't mind having agency for an outcome we like.
Exactly.
We generally don't want agency for an outcome we don't like. Even if it is the best of what's available.
Right. We have to take to own it.
Yeah. And again, in the realm of the political.
Yeah.
Think about this current administration when they came in. No good alternatives. And they're going to get blamed.
Exactly. There's a no-win situation.
No-win situation. But from the standpoint of what is the best thing in the long run, it's like, okay, obviously do something to get the economy going again, okay, so it's going to generate more debt, and you're going to have to deal with that. But it's still a whole lot better than letting the whole system completely collapse.
Right. I mean, so in some ways, it's like choosing your anxiety. And choosing which, okay, I'm going to be less anxious over this, even though I am going to be anxious, then I'm going to be over that, because over that, a lot of things are going to go really badly, and it's going to be a much worse situation. So let me just take the lesser of the evil, so to speak, and live with it, and be with it.
Yes. And that brings up another element of why the kind of economics I like talking about is so untraditional. Because it recognizes that how you make a decision also impacts your well-being, right? So if you're being super anxious, your sense of well-being may be a lot lower. So if you can do things to lower your anxiety, and there's a couple of ways you can do it. One, for example, if you exercise, if you literally burn off some of that energy,
mm-hmm.
it can calm your anxiety down enough that you can be clear-headed, or at least clear-headed enough that you're not doing something foolish.
Right.
Okay. Similarly, just being aware that you're going to have anxiety means that when it shows up, it's not unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And very often, it's the unexpected showing up that enhances anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what is this?
Yeah.
This is also useful for understanding the transition from adolescence into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
You literally have to go through the process of seeing how does your body actually work? I mean, you can kind of be aware of what you're likely to go through, but until you actually have experienced how your body responds, then you don't know how to step back and think, oh, yeah, that's how my, this is what my body does.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't need to freak out about that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, going back to choosing anxiety and decision making and all that, I counsel from an existential point of view very much so, and so when clients are trying to make decisions and they're trying to go forward with a difficult situation, a lot of the times the work that we're doing is really about identity and who they want to be in the world, and what values do you stand for? And what things are important to you, and what is the most important expression of your identity in this particular situation, which might differ from in a different situation, and different aspects of your identity become salient in different situations and inform your decision making in that way.
Yes, exactly. And that reminds me of another thing with respect to decision-making and choices is, you know, there is the sort of the outward manifestation of your preferences in your spirit. And those are kind of the ones that in many ways are the most satisfying, right? Because if you say, well, I'm an artist, you know, you identify as an artist and you create an artwork, then it's very easy to say, ah, expression of my artistry. If you're a musician, it's playing music. If you're a mathematician, it's coming up with some kind of a theorem. If it's an accounting, it's balancing the books. You know, if you're fastidious in your cleaning, you know, it's having a totally
germ-free
environment. But sometimes being true to your most authentic self, your most authentic spirit, doesn't mean that it's going to be manifested in a way that is immediately visible to others and to yourself. Because your manifestation in any particular moment, and this is where economics comes in, it's completely dependent on what are the resources that are immediately around you. You know, who are the people around you? What are your social institutions? And so sometimes expressing your authentic self just means that you don't necessarily pick something that you like, but you choose something that's truest to who you are, even if you don't like the outcome.
Like your most feasible authentic self.
Exactly. That's right.
It's like, this is the most me I can be in this situation.
There you go. The most me I can be. That sounds like your book. Me I can be. Okay. So why don't we're about 40 minutes in. So let's take a short break. And then we'll go on with the next part of the show.
Okie dokie.
Okay. And so, again, we're going to play the song A Soul Lost by Mishama, which is the larger piece from which the intro and the rejoin has been built off of. So please enjoy.
International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
We return to Economics and the Spiritual Path, hosted by David Axelrod.
Well, welcome back, everybody. As a reminder, if you would like to call in, the number is 646-564-9714. Again, that's 646-564-9714. And today we're chatting with Carol Boyer, adjunct professor at Montclair State and licensed professional counselor. She's bringing many interesting concepts from her practice and her perspectives as a Wiccan pagan practitioner. So in the first part of our show, we talked about alternative and consciousness. And in the second part, I'd like to discuss what I refer to as the three modes of causality. Now, in science and economics, we typically understand causality as some event that precedes another event that causes it to happen, sort of a chain of cause and effect. But what I find very useful to get a better grasp of, consequence and in particular the role of imagination in contrast to memory in our lives is to consider three modes of causality. They are push, pull, and pop. Now, push causality, is when past events push the present away from it. And that's sort of our normal way of understanding causality. Something happens in the past and it just, pushes it off into the future. So just kind of picture that. Your past event pushing the present away from it. Pull causality is when the future is pulling the present toward it. Okay? So push is past pushing the present away from it toward the future, and pull is the future pulling the present toward it. Now, why is this important? Well, in the same way that physically pushing and pulling has an impact on how much power you can put into it, but it affects the directionality. So for example, if you push something, you can put more effort and energy into it than if you're pulling it. The challenge, though, is that when you're pushing, even though you've got more energy, it's more likely to move off in directions not on the straight line that you might be trying to get at. So when you're pushing something, you can get more energy into it, but you'll also have more uncertainty about where it's going to move. Pole causality is more of you know where you want to end up. So you're making your decisions from the standpoint that I am already there. But that's how it's the future. I'm already there, and I'm pulling it toward the experience I want for the future. Now, because it's pulling, it's not as much energy, not as much force that you can bring to it, but it doesn't have to be as much forceful because it's going toward the direction that you want. And this is a very important contrast because you have to decide if what you want is the experience of doing a lot of work towards something, or do you want to be effective in getting the outcome? And that's something we all deal with in life. Sometimes you just want to feel like you're doing something. I don't care what happens. I want to do something. Only to find out that, guess what? You end up in a place that you really don't want to be, and now you've got to do more of something. Whereas, if instead of trying to push things along, you're pulling it towards where you want to go, maybe it's not as satisfying in terms of feeling like you're doing a lot. But when it ends up closer to where you want to be, you have more of an experience of what is more of an experience and more of an experience of efficacy. And I think that's one of the challenges between being driven by emotions and being driven by reason. When you're in a more emotional state, it's really about putting out as much energy as you can. And that means that you're not always as clear and focused about what the consequences are. Rationality, you can be more clear about the consequences, but it's not always as satisfying. Unless, of course, you're like me and you like to play with numbers and logical things, it's very satisfying. But that's why I'm an economist and most people are not. So, push and pull. But there's also a third mode that I want to present, and that is about the present. And that's called a pop causality. And so pop causality is when present events popping into or out of existence. And so this is different between the push and the pull. So with the push, you've got something in the past that's driving you along. The pull, there's something about the future that's pulling you toward it. So there's this movement. You can be aware of the causality. You know, one way is sort of like a forward moving. Another way might seem like it's, you're bringing the past along with you. But there's kind of this movement along either way with those two causalities. Popping is, it's almost like it's a perpendicular stimulus. It's just something that just seems to come out of nowhere. You wouldn't have expected based on the past, and you wouldn't have expected based on where you want to go in the future. It just shows up. And in some ways, those are almost the mystical, magical moments we have in our lives when we experience something that's just out of nowhere. And many times, that's all it is.
It's just something happened in that moment.
It could be curious. It could be amazing. It could be terrifying. But that's it. You know, it doesn't necessarily change the path of your life. It's just something cool that happened. And at the same time, if something just pops in, depending on how you choose to be aware of it, how you choose to be conscious of it, you can end up bringing it along with you, whether or not it needs to be brought along. And so there you have in that moment sort of this gift out of nowhere. And what you do with it is your choice. And those are the moments where the momentum of life gives way to the possibility of something completely different. So that push, that pull, that pop, and that sort of allows a way of understanding causality is not merely something in the past causing something in the future. Carol, would you like to?
Well, I was just very briefly, I was thinking that push from a counseling point of view is kind of almost the momentum of your life experience so far kind of guides you in a particular direction. Pull, from a magical perspective, if I'm doing a working and I want a particular outcome, I'm actually going to take the time and energy to imagine myself in that future with the outcome already achieved. And I'm going to try to put myself in that future and then pull the energies towards that outcome. So that's kind of how that was speaking to me. And pop sort of equated to me to insight in a counseling session. Now, I've had clients who had amazing insights and then took specific actions based on that insight and had amazing outcomes. I've also had clients who had the same insight session after session after session and never moved anywhere. So just because something pops doesn't mean it's going to snap and crackle or get you anywhere in particular.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well put. Yeah.
If you have the pop, you don't get the snap and crackle.
Yeah, because if those other two are taking a vacation, you're stuck.
I mean, does that equate for you?
As a matter of fact, it's something you said there that I'd like to mention about the relationship between magic and, you know, doing things in the world. And that is what some people call like a magic working, you know, we're imagining.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, that can be very similar to what engineering is all about. So if
very much so.
Designing a piece of equipment, if you're doing architecture, what are you doing? You're saying, this is what I want to accomplish. Now, how do I go from where I am now to having that thing? You know, what pieces of equipment do I need in let's say that robot that I'm building?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What rooms, what building design do I need for that architecture?
Yeah, how's it going to function? What do I need it to do?
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Software, same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the difference is maybe magical working is where you don't maybe have all the little details Mm-hmm. You've got enough detail that you know you where you want to go, and you know, maybe you've got a few bones,
mm-hmm.
and so you're kind of putting out to the universe. Okay, this is what I got to work with. You know, get to the rest.
Here's my vision.
Then you have to get the practical bits to line up.
Right.
Whereas as an engineer, it is your responsibility to fill in all those pieces.
Uh-huh.
And in many ways, that's where alternative consciousness comes into play. Not only in the sense of what are the alternatives, what are feasible, but also moving your consciousness from a place of, you know, I've only got these bits, I don't know how to tie it together, and then asking your higher self, please do this for me.
Help me figure this out.
Yes. To when you're being an engineer, you are putting yourself in the realm of the higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm being the higher conscious right now. So I need to see the details. And I think that's one of the reasons why that people who do engineering have a certain confidence about them,
mm-hmm.
and a certain sense of agency and empowerment that many other people don't have.
Oh, yeah. I think they're very literally co-creating a universe in a very material, tangible way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And some of the engineers that I know, will couch those moments of engineering insights as almost kind of a mystical
something
quality,
spiritual.
To it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I like to make that connection to open that up as a possibility for those who are on a spiritual path, to those who rely on magical working,
mm-hmm.
that one of the ways they can even more deeply empower themselves is, yes, do your magical working if that's what works for you. And, when you've done your working, take some time and just allow yourself to be a channel and be aware of being the channel for that engineer side.
Oh, sure.
And I think in that way that provides an opportunity to be the one that's actually figuring out which pieces to put in.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Any magical practitioner who's of any experience will tell you can do all the work you want, but if you are not doing those things on the mundane level that are moving you towards that goal that you have on a magical level, then you're stuck anyway. You can be the best magician in the world, but if you cannot do those things on the practical, mundane level that move you to support your magic, then you're shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah, exactly. And that's very similar to any kind of planning. So, for example,
yeah.
with economic planning, you may have, when I retire, I want to have, a modest home, and let's say, I want it to be in the mountains, so I can go skiing or whatever. Or, if you want, maybe you want it closer to the city, so you can go and see plays and stuff like that. And part of the planning is figuring out how to have the finances to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And figuring out what location is going to be the most convenient for fulfilling all the things that you want to do. But you still then have to fulfill all the components of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that means not only doing the work, but making the conscious choice to stick with the plan, unless there's something that pops into existence,
like the lottery,
like lottery, or something that is truly an overwhelming opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And related to that is to recognize that when something that does pop into your life is it one of those things that you revise your plans for? Because if you do revise the plan, that is going to be a lot of time and energy and finances to build a whole new direction. So it better be the case whatever pops into your life is also going to be a resource, like a true material resource, as compared to an experience that pops into your life that maybe in that particular moment you allow yourself to fully absorb because it's such a cool moment. But you don't necessarily change the plans in your life because it doesn't give you the resources to really change your plans in a way that you can fulfill.
Right.
And I, you know, from an economist, you know, I can talk about, you know, cost-benefit analysis and all that. But I kind of imagine that that also talks to certain personality types that can be easily distracted. That, you know, they can have a great appreciation for, like, the beauty of the moment. But it carries them along so much that they feel the need to, like, have to change their whole lives. You know, as if, how can something be that beautiful and powerful if I'm not completely able to change my life over?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not about changing your life. It's about recognizing the fact that you have the life plan the way that you do allows you to have those beautiful moments.
Right.
That is part of the bigger plan.
Yeah.
It's just that you don't necessarily have those amazing moments all the time.
Right. They're peak experiences for a reason.
They're peak experiences for a reason. But if you've planned your life well, you can still have many of those peak experiences, but without the cost of some, you know, devastating, you know, depression or downtime.
But it causes, it requires you to have more awareness of what does this experience continue to move me in the direction I'm going. Or is it just something like a one-off to be appreciated in its fullness, but it is not the focus?
Exactly. And I think that does bring in the distinction between either higher or lower consciousness, or maybe more effective way of saying it is a narrower and a broader consciousness.
Yeah.
So with narrow consciousness, it's like you have the capacity to savor it, you know, like in a bigger way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not being aware of other stuff. And so that's why it can be very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're so narrowly focused in the moment, but it also means you're more vulnerable to being pushed around by other things. Because if you're so focused in that moment, you're ignoring how other people are affecting you. You know, it's sort of like, you see this incredibly beautiful flower, you know, in this meadow, and you're just totally focused on it. And you're completely ignoring the fact that there's a tornado coming away. In the moment that you're appreciating the flower, you're getting all the juice from it.
The tornado does not detract from the beauty of the flower, but it is a thing that must be considered.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
And a hasty retreat would be in your best interest.
That's right. And, you know, that is one of the natures of, you know, having an economic understanding to your spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
That it is desirable to have those moments, those peak moments. It's desirable to feel that connection with higher power, you know, with these moments of
transcendent bliss and enlightenment. Those are desirable moments. But part of it is maintaining the space that is required to have those moments as being part of the content of your life and not getting permanently lost in the beauty of the moment to the detriment of all the other moments that you can have in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, I know in my own personal experience that when you have these multiple moments, but that you also have that feeling that you have done the things that have planned and brought these along, that you induce a greater moment where, you know, instead of a moment being something that's a split second or a few seconds, you generate a consciousness where the moment could be years or decades, and then all of a sudden you still have the beauty of that narrow focus, but now it's immeasurably larger because it's not just a fraction of a second. It's experiencing all these years as a single moment. You know, experiencing your life as a single moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
well, that maps to Erickson's stages of development and coming to towards the end of your life and integrity versus despair and feeling that your life stands for something and that it has internal coherence and that you achieve a well-lived life as opposed to feeling like you maybe simply paid attention to all paths and had no through line.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's really well said. That's an excellent comment. Because I think part of following a spiritual path, part of it is at times it's just figuring out what it is that you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe what your ethics and morals are. But certainly one of the things that we probably all desire from doing spiritual work is a connection with a higher consciousness with a greater meaning in life.
Mm-hmm.
And having those pops are sort of the little dots in a pointless painting. But until you have that broader perspective, those little dots don't become
an
amazing image.
Yeah, if you're too close, it's just chaos.
It's just chaos. It's like, wow, what an amazing blue. But, you know, you're missing the forest for the trees.
Yes. It reminds me of Sunday in the Park with George, the musical. And as Mandy Patinkin playing Seurat is doing the half, finishing the half, it's a song. And he says to the prospective viewer of the eventual work, the hat, so red, so black to you, so red to me. Because he's painting, he's doing pointillism in the red. But when you step back, the hat appears black.
Yeah, interesting. Yes, exactly. And, you know, that, you know, kind of brings up, you know, the whole Einstein relativity, you know, frame of reference. You literally measure, even, you know, physical measure is different.
Mm-hmm.
So we have. Oh, my studio has blacked out for a moment here. Oh, my computer wants me to log back in.
Uh-oh.
Hopefully that is not going to be a
technology
problem.
Technology. There you go.
And wires and cables and all this kind of
stuff. Oh my.
And let's see. Well, this has been over an hour, but I think this has been particularly well spent. So thank you very much, Cal.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
I really appreciate your thoughts and your insights and your expertise and the viewpoints that I don't necessarily easily have as an economist.
Because I'm not one.
Okay. Do you want to give any contact information for yourself?
I am a counselor in private practice in Montclair. I have a website at www.carolboyerlpc.com. And all my contact information is there.
Great. Thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks very much for the plug.
You're welcome. Okay, so as we prepare to end the show, in case you would like to contact me, again, this is David Axelrod. You can either contact at information about me at daxe.com, that's daxe.com, or you can also go to David Axelrod, PhD, that's davidaxelrodphd.com, and there's a form there that if you want to send messages to me, and I'm starting to get some of my writing up there. So those are two ways you can contact me. So I hope you've found this show very interesting. I know I have, and I look forward to seeing you next week. So long for this week, and be well.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.